The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 5, text number 22. Given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Dasathikari. Recorded on May 13th, 2012, in Austin, Texas, USA.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Yehi sansparsha jabhoga, yehi sansparsha jabhoga, dukkayo naya evate, dukkayo naya evate, adyanta vantakonteya, adyanta vantakonteya, nateshu ramate buddha, nateshu ramate buddha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery which are due to contact with the material senses. O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and so the wise man does not delight in them. Purport. Material sense pleasures are due to the contact of the material senses, which are all temporary because the body itself is temporary. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. Knowing well the joys of transcendental pleasure, how can a liberated soul agree to enjoy the false pleasure? In the Padma Purana, it is said, Ramate yogino nante satyanande chedatmani iti rama prade na sau parang brahma vidhiyate. The mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the Absolute Truth, and therefore the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, is also known as Rama. In the Srimad Bhagavatam also, it is 551, it is said, Nayang deho deha bhajang naloke kashtan karman arhati vidbhujang ye tapodyavang putraka yena sadvang shuryaryashmad brahma saukyam tvanantam. My dear sons, there is no reason to labor very hard for sense pleasure while in this human form of life. Such pleasures are available to the stool eaters, hogs. Rather, you should undergo penances in this life by which your existence will be purified, and as a result, you will be able to enjoy unlimited transcendental bliss. Everybody pay attention. Everybody's minds are wandering here and there. Try to focus on what's being spoken. It's more important than all the little things going on around the room. This is the most important thing, to hear the words of Srila Prabhupada. Therefore, those who are true yogis are learned transcendentalists, are not attracted by sense pleasures, which are the causes of continuous material existence. The more one is addicted to material pleasures, the more he is entrapped by material miseries. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Parakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ladita Shri Vishakanvitamscha. This has got to be one of the most significant purports in all the Prabhupada's books. Really, it really is. the verse in the purport is so profound. The first point is, intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery. That means those who engage in material sense gratification are stupid. They're just plain stupid. That's what it means. They're less intelligent people. They're morons. You see, they're morons. They don't realize what they're doing. Mandasya manna matyo madhya bhagaruta vrutaha. Bhagavatam says. They're foolish people, fools and rascals. They're actually, they want to be happy, but they're absorbing themselves in those things that are simply going to make them more and more miserable. I mean, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. The material society right now we're living in. They're engaging in things that is simply going to make them more and more and more miserable as time goes forward. You see? That's the first point. So an intelligent person says, hey, I don't want anything to do with this. I don't want to be a part of this madness that's going on all around me. I don't want to be part of it. Just like Plato, he gave an example, the great Greek philosopher Plato. He gave an example of some men tied up in a cave, and there was a shadow display in the wall. And that's all they knew. They were just tied up, and all they could see was this shadow display in the wall. They couldn't see anything else. They thought that was the reality, you see. One man somehow got loose, and he kind of wandered around. He wandered through the cave and somehow made it to daylight, and for a while he was completely blinded. He couldn't handle it, but finally he adjusted. And he realized there was a whole other world out there. There was a wonderful world. There was fruits and flowers and birds and rivers and people and societies and all kinds of interesting things going on. So he wanted to go back down into the cave to save the other fellows that were tied up there, you know, completely deluded by the shadow display in the wall. And they thought he was completely insane. That you're insane. You've gone crazy, you see. They couldn't understand. They couldn't understand there could be such a place where it's full of light and there's so many varieties of things. They thought it was complete. He was hallucinating, you see. So, this is actually a very good example Plato gives, you see, because this material society, there are people who are simply caught up in this false display of what is happiness. You know, money, power, prestige, sex life, food, sense gratification, you see. They're completely caught up in a false conception of what brings happiness. They think by connecting the material senses with the material sense objects, that will make me happy. But there's no way that can make you happy. You know why? Because you're not the body. It's like trying to derive pleasure by, you know, connecting your car. Well, I'm going to connect my car with your car. I'm going to rub my bumper up against your bumper of your car out in the street. And that's supposed to give me some pleasure. Because your car is sitting there, and I take my car, I'm going to snuggle up right to you, and I'm going to touch my bumper to your bumper, and wow, now I can really feel good, you see, because my bumper is touching your bumper. That's material sense gratification. You see? It doesn't make any sense. It's not even me. It's just some car sitting out on the street, and I think that's pleasure, you see? So that's what they do, and they have all these false conceptions of pleasure based on the I am the body. But this material body is actually just a growth on the due to the contact. You actually are the spiritual body, Prabhupada explains. You are the spiritual body. That is actually you. This material body is just some kind of growth that is temporarily manifested on you. On top of your spiritual body, it's not really you. It's some growth, you know, like you get some rash or something. So this material body is like some rash you contracted, you know, some poison ivy or something. You know, it's not actually you. The actual body is the spiritual body. You are the spiritual body. This material body is just something that was contracted, you see. Some poison ivy or some poison consciousness, you see. The poison ivy of I am the Lord. You contacted somehow that poison ivy of I am the Lord. And so now you've got this body. And so you have to wise up and realize you're not the body. Otherwise, no matter what you do, you're just spinning your wheels. You're not making any progress. Why? Krishna says, O son of Kunti, such pleasures have a beginning and an end, and the wise man does not delight in them. So whatever pleasure you can get from your body is only temporary, but you, dear ladies and gentlemen, are not your bodies. So to take pleasure in them will simply cause nothing but misery. A wise person says, I'm not going to delight in this stuff. I'll do it to keep body and soul together, but I'm not going to delight in it. He said, it's something I do, but my actual delight is my relationship with Krishna, with God. You see? That's my actual delight. Prabhupada elaborates very nicely. A liberated soul is not interested in anything which is temporary. He doesn't mess around with the inferior pleasures, you see. Now, just like an adult, you know, when he was a little kid, if he saw a penny in the street, he gets all excited, oh, I found a penny. When he grows up, he says, I don't want to bother bending down and pick up some dirty penny from the street, you see. As a little kid, he's all excited, he found a penny. But now he doesn't even want to bother touching the thing, you see. Actually, in Australia, they've eliminated the penny, you know. They don't even have it anymore. They still have it on their cash register, but they round it to the nearest dime or nearest 5 cents. No one even cares for a penny anymore. They may do that here, too, in the U.S. Get rid of the penny altogether, you see. So, in this way, the wise man, he's not interested in this stuff. And this verse is really something here from the Padma Purana. This is an incredibly wonderful verse. The mystics derive unlimited transcendental pleasures from the Absolute Truth. And therefore, the Supreme Absolute Truth is known as Rama. So you could say the word Rama means, you could say the reservoir of unlimited transcendental pleasure, Rama. So how do you derive that pleasure then? How can I become one of those mystics? If we're intelligent, that's what we should be asking. I'd like to be one of those mystics that can derive unlimited pleasures from the Absolute Truth. If we're intelligent, that's what we should be asking. A foolish person say, oh, I don't believe this. This is just nonsense. This is just pie in the sky. I don't believe any of this stuff. That's a foolish person, you see. An intelligent person will think, well, let me check this out. If it's true or not, at least let me try it and see if it works. You see? The intelligent person will at least do that much. He'll give the Padma Purana the benefit of the doubt. After all, it's an ancient scripture that's been followed by great sages for thousands and thousands of years. So why not at least give it a try, you know? See if I can do that. See if I can derive that unlimited transcendental pleasure from the Absolute Truth. So how do you do that? Well, you have to have a spiritual master. Somebody asked me, can't I just read on my own and be my own teacher and just read Prabhupada's books on my own? Well, what is it? And then I quoted him right from Prabhupada's books. This is how spiritual Prabhupada says you have to have a spiritual master. So if one wants to take, well, I'm just going to read the literatures. Well, then do what the literatures say. It's not just simply some theoretical thing. You have to apply it. You say, well, I'm really happy. I got a cookbook. Now I'm going to have some nice banana bread. I'm just going to read the recipe. And my banana bread will manifest by reading the recipe. You think you can get a banana bread just by reading the recipe? No way. You got to take the ingredients. You got to put them in the bowl. You got to mix them up. You got to set the temperature in the right place in the oven, you know. Grease the pan, flour the pan, everything. Do follow the instructions. Do what the cookbook says, and then you will get banana bread. So simply theoretically, you know, well, I'm really enlightened by this philosophy, but I don't want to do anything. Prabhupada instructed me about that. I got so many wonderful instructions directly from Prabhupada. Because I really like to study, you know, these books are amazing. So, but we were, I was with a devotee, it was Vishnu Jana Swami and a whole big jolly party of devotees in New York City, and every day we, you know, have a morning program, immediately go out the whole day, and having kirtan, distributing prasadam, distributing books. It's a pretty blissful festival we had. We set up Radha Damodar, the big Radha Damodar, in front of the New York Public Library, right on the street. We had arti for Radha Damodar in the public. It was quite an amazing preaching, Vishnu Jana Swami. And it was really bliss, but, you know, when can I read the books? I was thinking, when can I read these books? It's nice. So one day, you see, we all got on the subway, and I headed over from Brooklyn to Manhattan, you know. So one day I just kind of took a different route and went to, I'm thinking, this will be bona fide. I'll go to Tompkins Square Park, you know, where Prabhupada getting, you know, started the movement, you know. I'll go there and I'll write Prabhupada a letter. So I did that. I went to Tompkins Square Park. I went to the tree, you know, the Prabhupada tree. And I wrote Prabhupada a letter there, the tree. I said, Prabhupada, I want more time to read. You see. And Prabhupada wrote me a wonderful letter from Paris. He wrote me. He said, actually, there's much time in the day for study, but he said, but without practice, it will become dry and useless. So you have to, this knowledge is very attractive. The philosophy is really, really incredible. But if after a certain amount of time, if you don't actually do it, you will lose it, your attraction for it. We've seen this practically. There was one boy from Sri Lanka. He was coming here, he bought a set of Bhagavatams, he was all excited by it. He would come and tell us what he was reading about in this first canto, second canto. He's really, really in bliss. So why don't you chant japa also? He said, no, I just want to read. Well, he made it about halfway through the Bhagavatam and he lost his steam, we didn't see him again. That's it. The point is, you have to apply this knowledge. As Krishna says, you know, Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena sevaya. What do those words mean? It's not just some empty slogan. Every word that comes out of Lord Sri Krishna's mouth is full of unlimited oceans of meaning. Tadvidi pranipatena pariprasnena means obeisances. It means surrender. Now I bow down at your feet, I belong to you. The ana means with. It's pranipata, but pariprasnena means with obeisance. In Sanskrit, the ana ending means with or by. Pranipatena. So now, and then pariprasnena, with submissive inquiries, and sevaya, service. So to the extent that you actually engage yourself in the mood of service, you see, to that extent, this knowledge becomes revealed to you. It is not simply intellectual, academic, it goes beyond that. It's a matter of realization, because you have a spiritual body right now within your material body. And by engaging in devotional service, you reactivate, you revive your original spiritual consciousness, your Krishna consciousness. So one needs to get in that mood of rendering service. Even if it seems artificial, I don't really feel like it. It's not my nature to do service. I just want to hear and discuss philosophy. I don't want to do service. But one should understand intelligently, as described in this verse, an intelligent person, you see. Buddha. There's Lord Buddha and there's also Buddha. Be a Buddha. Be intelligent. We're asking you today, be a Buddha. Be intelligent, you see. Don't be a mudha, be a buddha, you see. Engage yourself in the mood of service. Take up the mood of service. Because by doing that, now you're connecting with the unlimited transcendental pleasure that since time immemorial the mystics have derived unlimited nectar from, you see. The key is service, devotional service, not begrudgingly service. Devotional service means with love. Well, I don't feel the love. Well, just do it as if you had the love then. Fake it until you make it. You know? I don't have the love. All right, but just do it as if you had the love. This was the famous, I've told this story many times of my godbrother Gargamuni, Greg, Bhakta Greg, you see. His brother Bruce, who became Brahmananda, he talked him into joining, you know. So, in those days, if Prabhupada was living upstairs in the across the little, how many of you have been at 22nd Avenue? Yeah, it's so nice, yeah. The little courtyard in the back and the apartment upstairs in the back. So three nights a week, Prabhupada would come downstairs, come through the courtyard in that back door, you see, and sit down on the little platform they had made for him. So when they would come in, everybody would bow down. That's what you're supposed to do when the spiritual master enters, because he's God's representative. The spiritual master is given the same respect we give to God. So when the spiritual master enters the room, everyone bows down, you see. So Gargamuni, back to Greg, he said, Swamiji, it was Swamiji in those days. Swamiji, when you enter the room, everyone bows down, but I do not bow down because it does not feel natural. He was very proud that he was a natural man, you see. I don't do things that are artificial. I just do what's natural, you see. Is that all right, Swamiji? Prabhupada said, you should bow down. Because by bowing down, the feeling will come. So I don't feel like doing devotional service. You, Prabhupada, would say, you should do the devotional service. But I don't feel like it, Prabhupada. It's not my propensity to wash the dishes or, you know, trim the bushes. You should do it. You see? Why? Because by doing it, even though I don't feel like it, by doing it, the feeling will come. The natural feeling will come, and then you will enter into that transcendental pleasure derived by the great mystics. This is a mystical process of reviving your transcendental connection with the supreme source of all existence. It's not some mundane social club that we need some work to get done, so we're going to try to sweet talk you into doing the work. It's not that way. Not at all that way. This is a process coming from Lord Chaitanya, coming from Lord Krishna, how you can revive your actual eternal identity that you once had before you fell into this material existence. So then Prabhupada gives this next verse. Don't labor hard for sense gratification. Of course, we have to work hard and nowadays, just to pay our bills, but don't do it for sense gratification. You're working hard, okay, you can't really avoid it. Most of us have to work very hard. And even Prabhupada, he worked hard. He said, I work harder than any karmi. It's a fact, Prabhupada worked very hard. Actually, for a devotee works very hard. 24 hours a day. He's not thinking, what can I get a vacation from this, you know? Just go to the space out in Acapulco or something and lay on the beach. The devotee doesn't think that way. For a devotee, there's nothing sweeter than, you know, chanting, preaching, offering arati, cleaning the temple. This is the recreation for the Vaishnava. Krishna consciousness is recreation. Doing devotional service is recreation. It's nectar. Whether it's, you know, cutting the bushes or cleaning the dishes, any devotional service is nectar for a devotee. Like, wow. For millions of lifetimes I've been struggling and suffering in this cycle of birth and death. But now I have an opportunity to actually serve Krishna. The devotee is just thankful. Oh, I'm so fortunate to have this opportunity to do some devotional service. Thank you, Krishna. Thank you, thank you, thank you for giving me this opportunity to engage in service. Whatever service it is, it doesn't matter. Just whatever service I can do, you see. That is the mood. whatever service, whatever needs to be done, that's what I want to do. That's the mood that one should have. That will enable one to derive unlimited transcendental pleasure. That mood of complete surrender. Then Prabhupada concludes his wonderful purport, how the true yogis are learned transcendentalists, are not attracted by sense pleasures, which are the causes of continuous material existence. What does that mean, continuous? What kind of continuity are we talking about here? Since time immemorial. Millions and billions of years. Millions and billions of lifetimes. Continuously suffering, and an unbearable hellish condition. We only imagine that it's blissful because anandamaya vyasat, the nature of the living entity, is blissful. So, like that author, Richard Farina, he had one book. I've been down so long, it looks like up to me. So we've been down so long in this material, is suffering unbearable hell after millions and billions of births, so we imagine that it's happiness. But actually this is misery. It is simply a miserable condition we're in right now, completely miserable. An intelligent person understands he's suffering. Most people are not that intelligent. They think, I'm really happy, you know, because the Cowboys just won the game, and I'm really happy because the Cowboys won. I mean, it's ludicrous, absolutely ludicrous. People are in such superficial, imaginary happiness. It's really sad. It's very, very sad. You know, I just got a raise in my job. I didn't get laid off. Many people got laid off, and I survived the layoff. I'm really happy. I mean, it's just... it's crazy. This is not happiness. This is hell. It's a very hellish situation we're living in right now. So an intelligent person, the intelligent person, he doesn't waste his time playing around in misery. He says, I'm tired of playing around in misery. I've been playing around in misery for millions of lifetimes. Now I want out. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. I want out of this misery. You see? So such a person approaches a bona fide spiritual master. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam. If one wants to actually attain that ultimate happiness, the supreme benefit, that most beneficial of all things, then one must approach the spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. That is stated by Krishna in the Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter number 3, text number 21. So who is the bona fide spiritual master? Krishna further, shabde parecha nishnatang brahmani upavramashrayam. He further elaborates in that verse. He says, the bona fide spiritual master is that person who has realized the conclusions of the scriptures by deliberation and is thus able to convince others of these conclusions. That's how Krishna defines the bona fide spiritual master in the Bhagavatam. He says, such great personalities who have taken complete shelter of the Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. So if we have any intelligence, you see, then we'll understand, this is what I have to do. I have to do this. If I want to achieve the ultimate benefit, I have to approach a bona fide spiritual master. I have to take shelter of him by initiation. That's what Krishna says. So that's the formula, if one actually wants to experience what these mystics have been deriving since time immemorial. You also have access to it. It's not just something you read about in the book, in the Bhagavatam. You can live in the Bhagavatam every day. You can become a self-realized soul like the great personalities of the Bhagavatam if you follow the instructions. That's all you have to do. You just have to follow the instructions. But do you want to remain attached? No, I will keep myself a little distant. Well, sorry. Then you are taking part in the sources of misery, continuing. You're not Buddha, you're Mudha. You see? You're continuing to take part in the sources of misery. So it's up to you whether you want to be Buddha or Mudha. An enlightened, intelligent person or a fool, ass-like person. It's up to you, Buddha or Mudha. One should analyze what is the result of being a Buddha or being a Mudha. See which one you want to do. Most people want to be Mudha. That's it. Shvavidara ushtra karai sangshitak parishakpuchu najatakrama patopeta jatu namagra grajaha. Those men who are like dogs, hogs, camels, and asses, praise those men who do not listen to the transcendental pastimes of Lord Shri Krishna, the deliverer from all evils. That is the reality now. Who is being glorified? Dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. And what is then the caliber of the persons who are glorifying the dogs, hogs, camels, and asses? They are little dogs, hogs, camels, and asses. That's it. Who will they vote for? When the dogs, hogs, camels, and asses go to vote, the dogs will vote for a big dog. The camels will vote for a big camel. That's all. You see? They'll vote for some crazy character who's not qualified to lead anything. Can't even lead his own family properly, and he wants to lead the whole country. You see? And that's the reality. He can't even lead his own family. He can't even lead his own senses properly. He can't lead his wife properly. He can't lead his kids properly. He can't give proper advice to anybody. He wants to lead the country. And that's what people are voting for. These kind of asses. They're voting for them. You see, election day. Death day. You see, every time they elect one of these mudhas to office, they're just putting another nail in the coffin of this country. That's all they're doing. Every new election, they're putting more nails in the coffin of this country by electing these rascal characters. They have no knowledge whatsoever of the soul and its relationship with the Supreme Soul. Shishi Radharamana Kija. So, that's their business. Fool's paradise, if that's what they want, but I'm not going to be a part of it. And if you're intelligent, you won't be a part of it either. You won't be a part of it either. You'll get out of this madness by taking shelter of Krishna, following these teachings given in the Bhagavad Gita. That is intelligent. So I can ask now if there's any questions. Yes.
Gurudev, there are some intelligent persons, but they say they just cannot surrender. They cannot bow down.
That's not intelligent.
They cannot.
They're not. That's called. Krishna describes them mayayapa hitagyana. Their intelligence has been stolen by illusion. They have big titles, PhD. You see, big doctor, professor. Mayayapa hitagyana. Their intelligence is stolen by illusion. Described Bhagavad Gita, chapter 7, text 15. You can study that. Yes, they are intelligent, but their intelligence has been stolen. Mayaya paritta. Been stolen by... means stolen by illusion. Mayaya paritta means stolen by illusion. That's where their intelligence is now. It's been taken away. They were intelligent, but it's been stolen by illusion. Yeah?
So, when that happens, what happens? What's going on in their mind? What are they thinking?
Why don't you ask them? You can tell what people think about what they write and what they say. I went on one conference. I'm on LinkedIn. There's the conference of spiritual authors, so I thought I would check it out, you know, because I'm a spiritual author. I knew they would be nonsense, but I thought it'd be interesting to see what might be on there. And they think they're God. These spiritual authors think that they're gurus, they think that they're God, they think that God is not really a person, God is just the oneness. I mean, they're crazy. You bring Bhagavad Gita, they will say, oh, this This is called literal misinterpretation. They can't take the words of Krishna as truth. They say it's not directly true. You have to imagine, you take your own meaning out of it according to your own interpretation. What Krishna says directly, no, we cannot accept. But we will take, we'll take our own interpretation. What we think it means is the truth. These are the so-called intelligent people, the spiritual authors. That's their approach to Bhagavad Gita. I just experienced it last week. And I've had enough. I just tried it, putting a few messages on the board to see what happened. I learned a good lesson. Don't waste my time. But I could see where they're at. It was good in that sense. I mean, they're really nuts. They're nuts, completely nuts. They can't hear. They think that all they want is establish themselves as the leading authority. That's all they want to do. It's true in the science field, scholars, all of them. Everybody wants to establish that I'm the leading authority. That's what they're all trying to do in different departments of knowledge. I'm the leading authority. Everybody wants to be number one. Okay, Kirtan.
If a pious man donates money for a temple, will he get any Krishna conscious benefit?
What's he saying?
If a pious man donates money to a temple, will he get any Krishna conscious benefit?
If a pious man gives money to the temple, he will receive great transcendental benefit because he's doing devotional service. Yeah?
So will he get, he won't get any good karma? Will he get any kind of karma?
He gets what, even better than karma. He gets what's called akarma. There's three types of karma. There's karma, vikarma, and akarma. Pious activities means activities for which you have to be rewarded in the material world. So they're not really that good because you have to stay here to get rewarded. Vikarma means sinful activities for which you have to get punished. Those are the worst things. And then akarma is devotional activities which liberate you from all karma. So they get something better than good karma. They get akarma. They get liberated from karma by doing devotional service. Yeah. All right, one more.
If people criticize Krishna, will they get bad karma?
If somebody criticizes Krishna, they'll get very, very bad karma, yes. Someone who criticizes Krishna, look what happened to Shishupal. You get very bad karma. It's a very sinful thing to blaspheme God. That's a bit. Okay?
Yes, Gurudev. Earlier you mentioned Plato story. There's a group of so-called philosophers. They asked this question about that. Was the man better off to stay in the cave, living that shadowy existence, or was he better off to go outside? What would you say to those people? How would you answer that?
Well, I probably wouldn't even waste my time with it unless they asked me. I wouldn't waste my time going and talking to them about it. Not worth it. Because they're not going to hear from me. They're too much caught up in the shadows. If I go to them, I'm talking to the people in the shadows. I'm like the man coming down from the light to talk to people in the shadow. They think I'm crazy. If somebody, just like if Prabhupada explains that if you go to this, you approach the spiritual master to argue with him and challenge him, then he says, "Don't, you're wasting the guru's time, you're wasting your time also." So I don't want to waste my time with people who are just going to argue. It's not benefiting them, it's not benefiting me. You know, I got so many people who are willing to hear what I have to say and willing to learn from me. Better I spend time with them. You see. Now, if they come inquiring for me, that's another thing. But I wouldn't go tell them anything. I wouldn't waste my time. I know the mentality of these people. They just want to think they want to all put themselves forward as a leading pundit. I'm the biggest pundit. And they can argue and argue and argue, what is the meaning, what is the meaning. They don't really care about the meaning. They just want to be the leading pundit. That's all. They're not qualified to hear. If they inquire submissively, then I will tell them. I'm not going to go bother and waste my time going to try to tell them. It's not worth it. Yeah.
Sometimes what happens is when we start to renounce things that are material,
When we start doing what?
Renounce things.
Yeah, renouncing material things.
And trying to become more intelligent. Sometimes doing it artificially may come across to someone as being heartless or as being not compassionate. Like if you just artificially renounce and say, I'm just going to leave home.
Yeah, okay, so I understand. Sometimes a neophyte devotee renouncing your thing may come across as too austere or too hard-hearted, okay?
So it may actually, to the other person, provide a negative impression than a positive impression.
It gives a negative impression, okay. So what's the question?
How do you deal with situations?
How do you conquer that?
Yeah.
It's pretty simple. Actually, there's a very illustrative letter in The Science of Self-Realization to Lynn Ludwig. You ever read that letter? Prabhupada addresses this very issue in the letter to Lynn Ludwig in the Science of Self-Realization book. She met a devotee out on the Kmart parking lot who was a little on the heavy side, and she complained to Prabhupada. She said, please hand-pick these pieces of heaven. She wrote him. Prabhupada explained, and it's very nicely explained. See, in the beginning, you're all attached to material sense gratification. You know it's bad. It's causing you misery. So you want to just just completely go cold turkey. Just completely, you know, get out of here. Just like that kind of a mood. So now you're going out to talk to somebody about Krishna, and they're totally caught up in it, and you're still attached to it. And because you're still attached to it, you have this overly negative thing about it, you know. It's like some brahmachari goes out and he says, oh, you have a girlfriend, you know. You know what I mean? Something like that. It's like, you know, it's because he's attached to girls and he's talking to some hippie guy, you got a girlfriend, that's crazy. Because we encourage, you know, boy, girl, get married. We're not down on boy, girl relationships. But he may be down on it because of his own attachment, trying to be a brahmachari. So this is simply due to immaturity. If one actually has a taste for the holy name, these things aren't bewildering him. That, you know, not that every girl he sees, his mind goes crazy, because he's got the holy name. He's got something better than beautiful girlfriends. He's got the holy name. So he's not like when he's preaching to somebody, he's not, and the neophyte is preaching to himself also when he's trying to preach to the guest. He's preaching to himself also because he's strong attachment. So that's why he comes across aggressive or heartless. But someone who's actually got a higher taste, you know, it's not an issue for him that he has to, you know, he's completely cool and blissful. He can just be merciful to the person. So it's just a matter of getting the way to conquer it is just to get your own taste, higher taste. He's overreacting or being overly negative because of his own attachments. That's why. But if one is actually relishing the bliss of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, you're not going to be bewildered, you know, by this other stuff. It won't faze you. You see?
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, go ahead.
Even somebody is advanced and it won't faze him, but shouldn't that person be cautious?
That doesn't give you, being, having a little taste for the holy name doesn't mean now you can just let your guard down and start going to movies or something, you know. You're getting a little, it's like you got your creepers coming up, but you got to protect your garden. I have a devotional creeper coming now, I'm getting a little taste, but it doesn't mean you can let your fence down and let the elephant come tromping through, you know. You have to keep your guard up. I mean, the same time you're developing a taste, you have to keep a guard up. Well, I have to be careful. No illicit sex, no meeting, no intoxication, no gambling. You see? One has to be cautious. That's a fact. But at the same time, you can, you know, as you're developing your own taste, you don't have to preach to yourself when you're trying to. You say what's just beneficial for that person. You see, now that you're trying to cut through your own attachments while you're preaching to them, you can say what's beneficial for them that will help them to come out of the illusion of material existence. You can be compassionate. You see. So actually, even the neophyte devotee should understand that if he just preaches the philosophy in a wonderful, beautiful way, that his mind will become peaceful automatically. So he doesn't have to be overly negative. I know that my experience with so many devotees, it was like this whole negative thing, you know. I was kind of turned off by it a little bit, but I met Vishnujanaswamy. He was just positive. It was just like, you know, come and relish the bliss, you know, kind of a move. Of course, we had rules in the ashram, the same, no relative topics allowed. And we had strict rules in the ashram. But it was so sweet, you know, it was so relishable, sitting down for prasadam, and he would tell Krishna book stories while we were taking prasadam. It was just so nectar, you didn't mind the little rules. They were okay, you know. No relative topics allowed in the ashram. You can't just talk about this or that. Only Krishna Katha allowed, you know, in the ashram. We didn't mind because with him, being around him, Krishna Katha was just flowing as like oceans of nectar, you know, flowing through the ashram from Vishnujanaswamy. So we would just, you know, swim in that tidal wave of nectar. Any other question?
So, Gurudev, you said that sometimes we have to fake it until we make it?
Yes.
So how do we fake love, and how do we do it sincerely?
Just like Gargamuni, bow down. He didn't want to bow down because it didn't feel natural. Prabhupada said, do it anyway. And he did it, and the feeling came in that way. Try to understand the perfect example. I don't feel like working in the garden. I don't want to do it. But let me do it anyway. And try to do a nice job. You don't have to pretend like you have. You don't have to pretend like you love it. That you don't have to pretend. That, oh, I really love doing. You don't have to fake it that I really love doing this. You don't have to fake that. But just go out and. It's not really faking it. It was an old saying, an old popular song: "Fake it until you make it." But it's not really faking it. The Pali wasn't the most. You have to just do it. Do it nicely, to the best of your ability. I mean, out of duty. Let me just do it. Let me do a conscientious, good job, that's all. Do you feel like going to work every day?
No.
But you try to do a good job when you're there?
I try.
All right, well, the same thing here. I don't feel like working in the garden. Let me try to do a good job. If I can put 8 hours at the office, I should be able to put 8 hours here also. I put 40 hours a week at the office, even though I don't feel like it. I try to do a good job because I know I get some benefit. Why can't you do the same thing for Krishna, even if I don't feel like it doing it? Let me work in the garden. I don't feel like it, but let me do it anyway. Try to do a good job. That's all. I'm not saying you have to pretend like, oh, I really love it. When I see this flower, I go into ecstasy. I'm not, you know. You don't have to fake it like that. I'm just saying, just do a good job. That's all. What needs to be done? Let me try my best to do a good job. That's all. It's like you do at your job. It's the same thing. But now, you're getting a bigger paycheck. You're getting bhakti. Understand? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not that, oh, I don't want to do it. The work you say, I don't want to do it. No, you don't say that. You get fired. You get fired. I don't want to do this. What are you telling me to do? This is not my nature to do this. Do you tell your boss that? No way. Right? You wouldn't tell your boss that. So if you can be that devoted to making money, at least you should be that devoted to Krishna. Otherwise, you're more devoted to money than you are to Krishna. You understand? I can do it at the work, but I can't do it at the temple. That means you're more devoted to money than you are to Krishna. And that won't, you cannot buy Krishna with your money. You can only buy him by devotion. So how do you get that devotion? Follow the instructions. Follow the instructions. Guru Mata is the, I've given her the authority. She's the administrator here, temple president. Any instruction she gives, it's coming from me. Coming from the spiritual master.
Whatever, Guru Mata is not here, but Abhaycharan gives, then what?
And Abhaycharan, when Guru Mata is gone, Abhaycharan is empowered. And any instruction of him is instruction from me. So in this way, if you follow, just like you would at your job, you'll get the pay. I guarantee we'll pay you. You'll get paid. Don't worry, you're going to get paid. We're going to give you greater benefit than you're getting at your job. You're going to get paid. If you do a good job, even though you don't feel like it, you're going to get paid big time. You're going to get the ultimate, you're going to get a greater pay than even Brahma, but being in the position of Brahma, or Kavira, the treasure of the demigods, you're going to get a bigger pay. As a fact. Kirtan?
How do you make someone a devotee without, like, breaking your relationship?
How do you make someone a devotee without?
Without breaking the relationship.
Well, if somebody doesn't want to be a devotee, you can't make somebody be a devotee. Actually, making someone a devotee is making a real relationship with that person. Now you're really making a relationship. All these other relationships are superficial. They're all superficial, based on the false bodily concept. So to make someone a devotee means now you're making a real relationship with that person. But if they don't want it, and they're simply attached to maintaining a superficial relationship, there's nothing you can do. You can lead the horse, you can give them prasadam, you can give them Prabhupada's books, you can try to engage them in devotional service nicely. If they're not interested, what you can do, you can lead a horse to the water, but you can't force them to drink. If somebody doesn't want to be Krishna conscious, they're having a relationship with them is not very important. Better to move away from those relationships. Sangat sanjayate, no, the other one, atsat sangat yag. One should give up the company of those who don't want Krishna consciousness. Stated by Lord Chaitanya. Atsat sangat yag. Officially we may maintain, you know, family members, officially, yes. But it's minimized. Like I have my brother here, and I like him. I mean, he's dear to my heart. He's very nice. He's a very nice man, very intelligent, materially speaking, nice man. And I have affection for him, but there's no Krishna consciousness there, so it's minimized. The relationship is very much minimized. I don't go visit him. If he comes here, I'll receive him very nicely, but I don't go. I'll have to go visit my brother. No, because that's not my eternal relationship. It's a temporary relationship with this body. Yes?
Good day. Srila Prabhupada said that our love for Krishna is a very natural thing, just like the attraction between a boy and a girl.
Right.
Some people have trouble feeling any kind of love at all. What can?
Yeah, that because we're completely polluted by lust, anger, greed, madness, illusion, and envy. To develop that feeling of love, it isn't. That's on the perfectional platform. You can't expect, you know, someone to be on the perfectional platform overnight. It takes a whole lifetime. And even then they may not have, you know, they may have to take birth again to complete the process. Or get some bonus points to go back to Godhead before having fully achieved it. So it's not that one can immediately jump to that platform. But you have to, just like Prabhupada gives the example of sugar candy for the jaundiced patient. The cure for jaundice is sugar candy, but it tastes very bitter. It's not going to taste sweet immediately. It's going to taste bitter. But he does it because that's the cure for jaundice. So by taking it on the order of the spiritual master, gradually, the physician in this case, the natural sweetness comes. So that for many, the bhakti is very bitter. If they don't have any previous bhakti in previous lifetimes, they're just starting off practically brand new, it may be very bitter for them in many ways, you see. They've had some philosophical understanding and realization, that's great. So such persons, even though it's bitter for them, they should continue to do the process dutifully, knowing that I just like the patient taking the sugar candy, even though it's bitter, gradually the sugar candy will regain its original sweet flavor. So in this way, one has to, and one should not expect that if I don't taste the sweetness, that it isn't sweet. It's just I'm suffering from material from Bhava Rog, the repetition of birth and death disease. Are there questions? Yeah.
Gurudev, I happened to read a Buddhist text recently.
A book what?
A book on Buddhism.
Buddhism, okay.
The objective seems to be it's the same, like stop the birth, death, rebirth cycle. But the process of doing that seems to be different. How are they?
What is the result?
He says the result is that they are also saying that we have to stop the repeated birth and death.
Right.
But the process is different.
Right.
How are they connected?
How they
is there any connection at all?
Their conception of perfection, first of all, is the in actual Buddhism, the merging into the causal ocean is the perfection. They don't understand that there's a supreme person out there. You have I can have a relationship with them. In other words, they achieve something similar to what the Maya. If someone who actually, of course, they aren't doing it. They're engaged in sinful activities. They're eating. They're not even vegetarians, many of them. So they're not really going anywhere spiritually. But even if one is a strict follower of Lord Buddha, strictly, you know, celibate, strictly vegetarian, just sitting down under a tree somewhere in the forest and meditating, you know. And let's say they did achieve the perfection of Buddhism. Still, they eventually have to take birth again because it's only a temporary, the impersonal liberation is only temporary. Aruya krishchena parang pradam tada patanyarod nachir tadushma dangriyaha. Even if one enters into that impersonal oneness, he must come down again into the material existence. So, there are some similarities there. They understand that desire is the cause of suffering. They want to turn off desire, but that's a desire. I desire to turn off desire. So it's a very hypocritical position, actually. I desire to become free from desire, but you've contradicted yourself. It's Buddhism is very artificial in that sense. How can you get free of desire? If you desire to get free from desire, you're still desiring. So how do you trick yourself? And they do the zazen. They sit down in a Zen monastery and they do the zazen. They meditate on absurd koans like, what is the sound of one hand clapping? You know, they have to sit there for hours in rigid postures, and if they nod out, the master whaps them with a stick, you see. It's pretty dry and austere thing, you know. They have Zen monasteries in California, Japan, of course. So it's a very difficult, dry position. You see little brown rice, you know. You can't talk. You have to practice silence, eat some brown rice, and sit all day and meditate. What is the sound of one hand clapping? You know, it's very austere. And you don't really get liberated. So it's not really worth... I don't know why you're wasting your time reading the books.
I happened to see that on the news.
You should read Prabhupada's books.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Don't waste time with these nonsense books. Read Prabhupada's books. Get a full set of Prabhupada's books and study all of them. Do you have Bhagavatam set already?
No, I have only Bhagavad Gita.
Now you get a Bhagavatam set. When you're ready, we can order it for you. Just let us know. We'll give you a whole set of the Bhagavatam. Then you're really going to go deep into the knowledge. Gita is the doorway into the Bhagavatam. Now you've understood Gita, now you're next. We have Bhagavatam class here every morning also. There'll be a Bhagavatam class tomorrow morning and Tuesday morning as well. Tomorrow and Tuesday morning, yeah. So any other questions?
Like you said before that in the road, the penny, nobody cared. But I pick up because he's thinking it's a good luck.
What's the point?
She said, you said that there is a penny lying in the road.
Yeah.
Nobody cares, but she says, I do care because I find it's a good luck.
Ah, huh. Okay. Any other one? You had something?
Gurudev, how one's past karma affects the extent of their involvement in the sources of misery?
Hmm?
How when the karma affects and the process of
taking part in the sources of misery, like
taking part in the source of misery, like a karma, how the karma affects
the past karma.
Past karma.
Your past karma is past karma means pious and impious activities. So, in either case, your karma is keeping you entangled in the sources of misery. Good karma and bad karma both keep you entangled. Good karma is less entangling. Bad karma is very entangling. You doing good karma, you still remain in the miserable condition of the birth and death. The only way out is akarma, devotional service. Doing pious work, well, I'm going to build a hospital for the poor people. Well, they have to take birth again now to get free medical care. That's your good karma. You gave free medical care, now you have to come back again to get free medical care. That's good karma, see. So that's a suffering condition. Even if you're getting your good karma, you're suffering. Yeah.
So does that mean you shouldn't do good things? You should just do what Krishna says?
Mm-hmm.
You mean to say that you should not do any good thing, just do Krishna's activities?
That wasn't my question.
No, all good things you can do.
Something. You shouldn't do good karma.
That's what I asked.
What is it now?
So you shouldn't do any good activities, just do Krishna.
No, you should do good activities in the service of Krishna, not separately from Krishna. A devotee does the best good activities, but it's all in service of Krishna, and therefore there's no karmic reaction, good or bad, from anything he does. He does the best. Why don't do bad, don't do good, do the best. That is Krishna consciousness. You want to feed the poor? Give them prasadam. You see? And then you get liberated and they get liberated. You give them turkey and you become turkey, they become turkey. Yeah.
So when calamities or bad things affect devotees, is that bad karma or is it Krishna's mercy?
It depends. For one who is completely purified of all their past sins, that's very subtle. One thing is, Krishna gives some. When you surrender, you get initiated, there's still a slight residue of karma that comes, a token reaction still comes. It's like Prabhupada compares it to a fan that's turning. You pull the plug in the fan, the momentum still, it's slower, but it's still some momentum there. So we say the guru takes away the karma, it's like 99.9%. There's still that little, that little bit of karma still comes. So it could be that, or sometimes a calamity could come. It's like the Vrijabhasis, they came back from the Kaliya pastime, and there was a forest fire. Was that their previous karma? No. Sometimes Krishna puts his pure devotees in the calamitous situations to increase their ecstasy. Because the more you surrender to Krishna, the more you feel dependent on Krishna, the more you become ecstatic. So sometimes calamities can be the special blessing of Krishna to help us become more Krishna conscious. In other words, under the spiritual energy also calamities can come. Material energy means karma. Spiritual energy means the mercy of Krishna. Calamities can also come as the mercy of Krishna. So it depends on can vary according to different circumstances. When Prabhupada was in a calamity, was it his karma? No. those heart attacks on the Jaladutta, was that karma? No. It was Krishna blessing Prabhupada, actually. That Prabhupada is increasing his feelings of dependence on Krishna. Yeah.
So Gurudev, if it's not our activities that actually please Krishna, but the devotion and the consciousness with which we do them, then why do we engage in very specific, very particular set of activities that seem ritualistic? Why don't we just do anything and just devote it to Krishna?
Well, we have to do what Krishna wants us to do, certain things. That's when. We have to see what Krishna wants us to do. Just like Arjuna, Krishna wanted to do something specific. Krishna has specific things he wants us to do. So if we're devoted to him, we'll do those things. He specifically wants us to do certain things. You understand? No, you don't understand.
I mean,
otherwise,
just like he, like, just for example, Krishna wants this Krishna consciousness movement will be successful. That's his desire. So, and he wants us to work together in this society that Prabhupada created, the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He wants us to work together as a loving spiritual family under the leadership that Prabhupada gave us within this institution. So Krishna wants us to do that. He wants us to do that. It's Krishna's desire that this movement is an incarnation of Krishna. ISKCON is an incarnation of Krishna. He's appeared in the form of ISKCON. And by serving this society to make it a successful mission, that is giving the greatest pleasure to Krishna. Nachatasman manusheshu kashtin me priya krittamaha bhavita na chame tasmad anya priya tarobhuvi. In chapter 18, Krishna says that there is no one more dear to me than one who preaches, nor will there ever be anyone more dear. So this is a preaching movement. We have to do what is needful for making this movement attractive so that more and more people can come and be blessed by this Krishna consciousness process. That pleases Krishna. Not that I just do whatever I want. No, we have to know, what does Krishna want me to do? Krishna wants this movement to be successful. That's why he sent Prabhupada here to the Western countries to start this movement. So we have to see, how can I serve the mission of Prabhupada, you see? That's what we should be thinking. How can I be the best possible servant of this mission of Srila Prabhupada? It's specific. Not that I can just do anything. No. How can I best serve Prabhupada's mission? That's what we should be thinking, you see? That's my prayer. Srila Prabhupada, how I can best serve your mission? Whatever you want me to do, it doesn't matter. Please just let me do whatever I can do to best serve your mission. That's my mood. So that should be your mood also. That's the mood where you become completely blissful. There's no more anxieties. You think, oh, I have to do this, I don't want to do that. You're always going to be in anxiety. Always going to be in anxiety. You'll never be happy. You just say, okay, I surrender. However I can best serve the mission, all your anxieties are gone. You become blissful, always blissful. Secret of happiness and Krishna consciousness. Just make that my one desire is however I can best serve Prabhupada's mission, you see. That's all everything else can go by the wayside, but that one thing is my only attachment, however I can best serve Prabhupada's mission. That's it. So our time has run out, so we'll, yeah? Yeah?
Today is Mother's Day, so on behalf of everyone, basically everyone wanted to honor Guru Mataji as, so with your permission, can we do that?
No.
What does everybody think?
Yeah.
Yes.
All right.
I can't say anything. Everyone wants us to do
that. What?
So on behalf of everyone, offer garland to Mataji. Guru Mataji ki
jai.
She's been serving everyone.
Even on the road, she does this too. When they give her garland, she saves it for the deities. She does it everywhere. All over the world, they give her garland. When she comes, she always saves it for Radha-Damana.
So whoever wants to give gifts, please come and give it.
Krishna.
Oh,
this,
you did?
No.
Krishna. Jai, Hare
Krishna.
Hare Krishna,
thank
you so much.